you have a family member who's narcissistic. Maybe it's your sister or brother or an in-law. Are you struggling to know what to do or how much to say? Welcome to this episode of Breaking Free of Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy. I'm a clinical licensed mental health specialist who has over 20 years of counseling experience, and I'm a narcissistic abuse survivor myself. Today, we're going to talk about complicated family relationships and how tricky it can get when one or more of the family members is a narcissist in this replay of a TikTok Live. So today's a weird day for me. It's my wedding anniversary of my marriage to my late husband. I was married 38 years ago. And we were married for 31 years. I can't say it was the easiest relationship. I mean, we were kids. We were 19 when we met each other and fell in love. And we both came from pretty traumatic backgrounds, so we had issues. And definitely, he's not a narcissist, but he had some, you know, he was rather entitled, kind of a traditional, it was a traditional marriage. You know, I held the home together, and it was hard. That part of it was very hard. And, you know, it is nice. A lot of people, this is what I've noticed, a lot of people romanticize relationships. I romanticized relationships. I thought that the fairy tale I'd been sold was true, that there is really a Prince Charming and you live happily ever after and you meet your soulmate. What I discovered is that's not what it's like, not at all. You marry the opposite sex and they're different than you and they want different things than you and they have different needs than you. And you attempt to patch this life together to make it work. And they don't necessarily see the way that you do. So there's tension and you have to work all that out. And then there's expectations. And then your maturity level when you meet each other kind of like sets the groundwork for what it's going to be like. And, you know, I wasn't very ready, honestly. I really wasn't very ready. In the end, I have to say that he changed. Dying actually made him a better man. That's kind of a sad thing to say, but it's also a beautiful thing to say that there can be closure for some of us. I definitely got closure. He made a lot of, kind of saw himself in a different light and made apologies with me around those things. And we had to wrap it up and he got to see some of the best parts of me, you know, the way it could come through for him. And I've watched other people die, actually. I've watched other people die of terminal illnesses. And I know that every person's going to approach it differently. And some people avoid it. Some people pretend it's not happening. Other people, you know, they feel fear all the way to the end. And one of the really cool things about my late husband was that he approached it with courage and dignity. He actually would talk about it. You know, his friends would take him out for lunch and he would have conversations about what it was like and what he was thinking and how he was feeling about it. He let people in on it, which I thought was a super, super brave thing. So yeah, today's a bittersweet day because not only is today's the 38th anniversary, but his passing of his death anniversary is fast coming up. So this was sort of the late stage of his illness. And it's gotten me thinking a lot, you know, thinking about relationships and healthiness and what do we look for and what do we want? What do I want? You know, if I'm going forward in a new relationship, what do I want? I'd be curious to hear, as those of you who've left relationships, you know, especially if you've left a toxic relationship, what are you most afraid of? What things do you kind of like have concerns around or you don't want to do again? I would love to hear that. And how has dating been going? I would love to know, you know, are you even trying? I've been taking a year off and I'm still not for sure if I'm ready to get into the dating pool. You know, I've had to do a lot of healing. I realized that looking for the next person, I was doing it for the wrong reasons. I was looking for a replacement again. And so I really am wanting to do this in a very different way, from a very healthy way. Can you speak on mother-in-laws with NPD? Let me talk about mother-in-laws in general. They get trickier with mother-in-laws who have personality difficulties. Mother-in-laws who have borderline personality disorders or a personality disorder or a narcissistic personality disorder. The tricky thing with families is that families come with lots of rules. And when you're inside of the family, you don't really realize that you're following rules, that there is a way in which things are being governed and expectations of family members. And then when someone new, that means there's a new kind of constellation that has to happen. You guys have to renegotiate things. And some families are very what's called enmeshed. Enmeshed families deal with stress and conflict by clumping together. They don't really encourage or support individuality. They prefer sort of a groupthink, for example. Then there are families who are more disengaged. They're the opposite end of the spectrum. That's a family who struggles to come together. When stressed, they tend to flee. They tend to move apart and deal with things on their own rather than coming together as a collective unit. So we all range as a family styles, constellations from enmeshed to disengaged. Well, then when you bring in personality disorders, it just makes roles and rules more rigid, more concrete, and likely to be fluctuating and odd, maybe not make sense to the rest of the world. And there's probably going to be a lot of work that the family does to keep the troubled member happy, because they tend to have the most power and control in the situation. So as a result, there's going to be a lot of the way this family structure is around that person in order to keep things the way that they want. Because they're controlling everything, they're running everything, and so there's a lot of placating that's happening. So I know you've been talking a little bit more about what's going on in this situation. I think that you have, at least other people have anyway. So maybe it's you, maybe it's not. I expect what's happened here is whenever you get involved with somebody who has a parent or a family member who's narcissistic, that what's going to happen then is their alliance is going to probably be stronger with that troubled individual than it is with you, because they've been used to keeping peace with this person and just not rocking the boat. So now you're coming together, supposedly trying to create this new unit, and they're still over here preoccupied, worried, and concerned about the management with this person, because they have an alliance with them. This person, you know, toxic people force alliances on us, and they make us follow certain rules in order to maintain the alliance, and breaking of that alliance is viewed as a threat. So again, as you've heard from me mention on other TikTok lives, narcissistic people as well as sociopaths, psychopaths see the world from a competitive standpoint. They see it in a warlike, win or lose-like way. So when there's a breach of alliance, you know, think of countries at war. When there's a breach of alliance, then they're going to see that as you are now potentially allying with someone else. And that will then end up being something that they perceived as a threat. We're talking about what happens when there's a narcissistic family member or mother-in-law or father-in-law, what happens to relationships in these contexts. So what do you do? What do you do when you have a partner who has a family member who's disordered like this, who's dysfunctional like this? Well, you're in a bind because you can't actually make them do anything. You can talk about some issues. You can point out what's happening and make them aware of them. But I would urge you to begin to think about whether or not this person has the ability to tolerate the loss of contact and connection with the dysfunctional person, with a toxic person. Yeah, exactly. That's what often happens, is that they have such a strong alliance that they allow this other person essentially to be the third member of your relationship, who's really the member who's in control. Whether or not you even see them on a daily basis or have regular contact with them, they essentially are controlling what's happening in your life. I've heard of people even having children on the timeline of their extended family members who have like planned vacations, like you're talking about, take jobs in certain locations or turn them down because they're not in certain geographical location. I've seen where there's a tremendous level of control this extraneous person has in this relationship. So the challenge becomes for you is to what you're going to do about it. I obviously urge you to pull that person into into therapy, couples therapy. I think that's warranted, is to have couples therapy if your partner is open to that and talking about this. But realize that any effort this person makes in regards to their parent is likely to be met with pretty huge consequences, pretty big loss of relationship with these people, and maybe they're not ready. That's what you're out of control with. You're out of control of whether or not they're ready with that. One of the errors that we make, so let me go ahead and tell you an error that a lot of us make in relationship to this, is that we end up trying to negotiate, justify, educate our partner about why they need to handle this person differently. The problem is that won't work. It won't work. You can download every one of my video about anything related to narcissism. You can buy every book in the sun about it. You can have all the conversations in the world about it, that they're not going to change until they get tired of it and they get ready to change. So it really comes back to, and this is the hard part about everything related to narcissism, when we are dealing with people who are toxic, we have to rethink our boundaries. We have to think about what we're going to do with people who are pretty much immovable pieces on a chessboard. They're not going to go anywhere. Unless we get rid of them. But if they're in our life, these are immovable chess pieces. So what are we going to do to become healthier despite these obstacles in our life? That's the tough stuff. And I saw some middle of the magic just said she wished she knew this 20 years ago. I wish I knew it 30 years ago. I honestly did. It would have saved me so much pain. Unfortunately, a lot of this is I've had to learn the hard way. It isn't just psychology didn't teach me this thing. This is the other thing. Let me tell you another really big secret of psychology. It's not really a secret, but it's something that most therapists know. But I'm going to tell you, we know when we meet you, this fact, it's very much a factor in therapy, but it's something you probably don't know. You're not ready to hear whatever I have to say until you're ready to hear it. I can tell you the most profound, I can tell you the secret of the universe. There's a book, sci-fi book called, I'm trying to think of something to the galaxy. You guys who are sci-fi will know what I'm talking about. And there's like the answer to the question. And this guy is looking for the answer to the question. And it's number 43. That's the punchline. It's something that makes no sense to the rest of us. But actually, that's very savvy, because that's true. The answer to the universe, I may know the answer to the universe. I may be able, it's 42. I may be able to tell you Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I may be able to tell you the answer to the universe. Unless you can hear it, unless you're ready to hear it, you won't hear it. It'll be the number 42 to you. It'll be like, what? What? Really? What are you saying? So you can only are ready till you're ready, and you will do nothing with whatever you hear, whatever you know, until you're ready. The same goes for everyone in your world. Everyone in your world. You can provide the most education. You could get the best experts in the whole world involved. And if they're not ready, they're not going to do anything about it. It will stay exactly the same. So it really comes down to what you're going to do about it. What are you going to do about it? And that's where your power is. But the reason is why we don't like that is because we realize it's going to cost us, that there's loss involved, and we're not interested in the loss. We want everyone to stay in our lives exactly the same kind of level, same kind of involvement, yet be different. We want things different, but it doesn't work that way. It really doesn't work that way. So I'm very sorry to hear about your mother-in-law situation, and good word with that. I hope that it goes better. Are you in a narcissistically abusive relationship and struggling to leave? Maybe you feel like you're in an impossible situation. I know I sure felt that way for a long time. I struggled to get out. I was so paralyzed. Then this is an event you're not going to want to miss. It's a live webinar on August 18th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Dr. Kristen Milstead. She's the author of Why Can't I Just Leave? A Guide to Waking Up and Walking Out of Pathological Love Relationships. During this interview, we're going to talk about things like, how does a trauma bond start? How do we break it? What is cognitive dissonance, and why does it cause such problems? Why do we find it so difficult to leave? This is going to be an incredible evening that you don't want to miss. Be sure to get your tickets in the show notes in the link below. How do you deal with it with a sibling? Because that is a different dynamic. It kind of depends. Again, I would begin to say, ask, what is the alliance that you have or don't have with this sibling? And what's your alliance rest of your family has with this sibling? So sometimes narcissistic siblings can be seen as sort of problematic, sort of like the identified patient where everybody just tolerates them. They're kind of the joke of the family. But then there are those who actually are the golden child, and then everything sort of rotates around them. I also know that I have talked to people who have had a narcissistic sibling who that sibling was actually abusive, like physically, verbally abusive. So there can be that dynamic as well, as where they sort of terrorize the family and control the family. So it depends on the way in which your family sets up the structure and what they do around that sibling. There was a person who has a pretty strong narcissistic tendency in my late husband's family, and that sibling doesn't tend to have a lot of credibility. He's sort of pushed to the side and sort of, you know, but I've also seen, I have a friend who has a brother who's a narcissist, and man, he terrorized their family, really, really control them. So it varies a lot from family to family. Again, of course, the strategies come back that you'll have to manage them the way that you manage anyone else, which is keep your distance, have a lot of contact with them. Again, here's another issue of, you know, dealing with family when they're in trouble. And so I'm so sorry, Rebecca, first of all, to hear about the situation that you're in, that you have your ex actually recovering in your home from a broken ankle, which means you're having to have close contact with this person and then dealing with all the toxicity that's happening with the abuse that you used to have. Now you're having to do again. You know, one of the nice things is this is an ex. It's no longer a person you're in a relationship with. So you have different ex. I don't know maybe if you've thought about this, but this is not a spouse anymore. This is not even a partner anymore. This is what you're basically doing is a caretaking situation. So make sure that you're clear with that around your own mental perspective, your own mental way you're defining this. This is not a partner. This is not a spouse. And then I would also be clear about what you're able to do or not do for this person so that you're not behaving like a partner or a spouse. Those are just some thoughts I had off the top of my head. That's where I would get confused. I'm kind of putting myself in your position and thinking, wow, I'd probably like show up as if we were still in a relationship when we're not in a relationship, and then forget we're not in a relationship because I feel bad, and this person probably has forgotten we're not in a relationship either because they don't have other people in their lives to help out. So I would be really clear about what I would give and not give and the expectations I have. And then make sure you get respite. Make sure that you are clear that you're going to have off times. You're not going to help. And that this person, here's the thing what I'm saying. I'm going to be clearer and say it even in a better way. I would say you are not this person's responsibility. Their own recovery is their responsibility. You've offered to help, but you need to be very clear on your timelines and your limitations. And you need to have timelines and limitations. You don't owe them nonstop care. That is not your job. That is not your job. And that is also not your problem. I'm sure that's not how this person sees it. And maybe it's not the way you've seen it either. But they are their own responsibility. I had total hip replacement surgery in November. I had two of them, actually August and November. When I had the August one, I actually was living alone. And I had to completely take care of myself alone. Hip surgery. Total hip surgery. I couldn't get up and stand barely. I did it. It was my problem. Not anybody else's problem. Certainly not my ex's problem. Or my family's problem. Or my kids' problem. It's my problem. So that's the way you need to view this with this person too. Is it is his problem. He may not like it. But that's his problem too. But sorry to hear about that. That's tough. Oh, so he's actually blackmailing you. Yeah, you may have to call the police. That's true. If this is how he's pushing you into that direction, you know, you may have to take that. You may have to take that course. Yeah, knee replacement is awful. I had hip replacement. Knee replacement, I hear, is worse. But hip replacement was not easy, that's for sure. Here you're telling me more. I'm doing it because your 18-year-old will be put on the spot if you don't do it. That is not your problem. I know it's easy for me to say that far, far away. I'm not you. And I know I don't have the investment in your son the way that you do. But maybe that's why I can say it. And maybe this is why you're asking me, because you probably already know what I'm going to tell you. And that is, we often save other people, but it isn't our job to save them. They have to save themselves. And it isn't making anything better. And it will only make, I already know a little bit about you to know enough that you can't take this on your plate. You can't. You've got enough going on in your life. That will have to sink or succeed on its own. And you giving up yourself for it is not going to help anything. I'm really sorry to hear you're in a situation. That's awful. Yeah, I know. Here's the last thing that you said. You said you want peace and not lose your power. The power you have is what you do. It's what you decide to do or don't do. What happens outside of you, you've never had any power over anyway. And interjecting yourself in it actually, it makes it more likely not to succeed. Here's why. This is true for all of us. Whenever we see something that's a failing situation or a bad situation and we interject ourselves as a way to sort of save it, prop it up, hold it up, we actually delay good resolution. We delay it. Our efforts to sort of make it better actually prolong the situation, prolongs the conflict, the agony, or whatever. So say, for example, let's use a completely different example. You've got a kid who's performing poorly at school, and you're fearing that in high school, and you're fearing what college is going to look like and the rest of their life is going to look like. You then running interference, trying to deal with the teacher, helping them study, all of that isn't going to teach that child any better management of their time, better techniques for learning, and also how to deal with difficult teachers and challenges. They have to learn or not learn that on their own. You doing this isn't going to make that better. In fact, it's more likely to make it not happen because you've now softened the blow. We keep people from bottoming out. And when we delay hitting the bottom, we delay their healing and things changing. I know it's bizarre and it feels like back ass word, but that is actually how things work. It's when we pull ourselves out of these equations that people then are forced to have to deal with what is. So your 18-year-old may not be able to set limits, but that is something your 18-year-old has to learn because they're 18. And your ex may be toxic as hell and will use his child to a ridiculous length, but your child needs to learn to set limits with that or not, unfortunately. Hard truth. I hate it. I wish our goodness saved people. I wish our good intentions saved people. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. Have you ever wondered what it's like to go through narcissistic abuse? Maybe you've not personally experienced it and wondered what it felt like to have this happen to you. Or maybe you're in a narcissistic abusive relationship right now and you wonder if you're the only one to experience the things that you're going through. Then you're going to want to buy my book, Love You More, The Harrowing Tale of Lies, Sex Addiction, and Double Cross, which is a true story that offers an intimate, graphic look at how abuse and manipulation caused such intense cognitive dissonance that I ended up betraying myself. You can get an audiobook, ebook, paperback, and a hardcover at all major online stores, or you can see the link in the notes below. And I can't wait to see you back this next Friday. Until then, goodbye.